Morning, students. If I gave you $1,000 right now, would you know what to do with it? Some of you would be overjoyed. And yet 3 weeks later, it might be all gone. Some of you might be like I was with my Halloween candy when I was growing up. I got this big bag of candy. And what does a six-year-old do with a big bag of candy? You only get it once a year. Well, I might lose it. And so I thought, I better save it. And so while my younger brother ate the entire bag of candy in a night, and I don't know if his stomach took it or not, I can't remember back that far, but I kept my bag of candy. I hoarded it and protected it. And eventually it all got thrown out because it was so old, or something to that effect. It's not the only time in my life where I have overdone it on savings and then ended up losing it in the end anyways and without the benefit of it. It's not necessarily the easiest thing to all of a sudden get $1,000 or have your first job and you look at that check and go, wow, I've never gotten that much money in my life. What do I do with it? Well, today I want to urge you to have a plan. You need to have a plan, and I want to urge you to seek counsel when that time comes, but this is going to be part of that counsel. And with many counselors, there is safety. So let me talk about then planning with regard to your money. The specific virtue is prudence. Prudence is the ability to foresee the future and make a plan. The Bible tells us that the prudent man sees the evil and hides himself, but the naive go on and are punished. A naive person is just ignorant. It's a kind of fool that's a very on the lighter side of the fool spectrum. It's because they're just dumb. It's not like they're willfully ignorant. Now, they may end up becoming a fool that is willfully ignorant. But we all start out naive. We just don't know. Well, if we don't know what normally comes in life, we are going to be walking right into danger. And so the Bible says that the prudent man actually sees what's coming, understands that when you touch a stove, you get burned. It understands that A causes B. Therefore, I don't want to do A, or therefore, if B is good, yes, I do want to do A. The prudent man makes those cause and effect, recognizes those cause and effect connections, and makes plans accordingly. And that's what I want you to be able to take this whole course and to say, okay, I now want to make a plan that's going to count and make good use of the resources God has given me, because I'm going to be held accountable for this, so I better have a plan. This is good. I'm glad you're convinced of that, because planning is a part of godliness. We talked about this last year in Theology 1. God never does anything without a plan. He's got a plan for everything, the Bible says. It's ordained in the heavens, Ecclesiastes 3. And so you should always have a plan. Spontaneity is not a virtue. Just doing it off the cuff, flying by the seat of my pants. I'll just see how it comes. No, that's not a virtue. Because you should always have a plan. Even if you say, well, I'm going to be spontaneous today. That's a plan. You just decided intentionally because maybe you're on vacation. Spontaneity is not the goal. Flexibility is the goal. So you have your plan with an open hand. You remember this? You put your plan in your hand and you don't tightly grip it because God is sovereign. His plan will always trump yours. It might use yours, but it might also refute yours. You have to maintain in faith, trusting God as an act of worship, an open hand so he can reach in, grab it, crumple it up, toss it aside, and you're going to be okay with it. That's the goal. Have that open hand. You got a plan. If he doesn't crumple it, you go with the plan. That's your rule of thumb. You demonstrate through your planning and your faithfulness to plans, you demonstrate the character of God who is faithful to his plans. Okay, now that's all review from last year, but it applies to money. You're going to make a budget and you're going to say, I'm going to spend this and this, and all of a sudden, here comes an expense and it's twice as much as I thought it was going to be. You know, all of a sudden there's a coronavirus. All of a sudden there's a gas shortage. All of a sudden there's a something. God is sovereign over all these events. And so it is going to be inevitable that at some point your budget will not match reality because you lack the ability to perfectly foresee the future. But you are able to foresee some things given, like you might say, all things considered equal. If normal events happen, this is the way they're going to be. And on that basis, God counsels you to make plans. You don't assume, but you open yourself. If this happens, we do this. If this happens, we do that. Let me just illustrate this planning business with regard to time. Time and money are related, aren't they? I mean, we save time, we save money. We spend time, we spend money. Right? We waste time, we waste money. Now, when you're young, it feels like time is endless. I got a ton of time. I got many years to come. And if I waste a summer or waste a month or waste a day, I got plenty more to spend. It ain't any big deal. When you get older, it's going to feel like a bigger deal because you realize how fast time goes and you realize there's only so much of it. Well, that's kind of the way it is with money. A lot of people just feel like money's endless. I got lots of money. And so, you know, I got money in my pocket. I got money in the bank. Hey, let's go out and have some fun. Let's do something. Are you sure? Yeah, I got some money. Let's go do something tonight. Those who presume on money as if it were unlimited, because it is not, they will typically overspend and eventually end up in debt, which is exactly where you'll end up if you don't have a plan. If you don't have a plan, you're typically going to spend money when you have it, and then when some unforeseen, or at least perhaps even foreseen thing that you didn't take note of, comes along, you won't have what you should have to pay for that. Just like procrastinating on a homework assignment. Oh, I got plenty of time to do it tomorrow. And then, bam, this event happens. Mom says, you know, I got great Aunt Sue showing up tomorrow and you need to clean your room. And you go, Mom, I didn't plan on that. Well, how much time did you have to do your homework over the weekend or over the week? And you look back and you go, well, I assumed I'd have this day. Ah, you assumed. Do you see how presuming on time is banking on the future, thinking I got, it's almost as if it's unlimited, that leads to procrastination. So also, presuming on money as if it were unlimited leads to overspending and debt. Attitudes like that don't appear to be sinister, but the Bible calls them evil and arrogant because we're acting as if we know more than what we know. I'll have time tomorrow. We don't know that. And they end up harming others. That's why it's evil, meaning it does bad to others. And it harms us. So, what kind of a plan can we make then if we don't know the future? Well, if you were to die or Jesus comes back and you're raptured, it won't matter if you got money in the bank or not. We're not talking about that kind of unforeseen future. You all should be ready through faith in Jesus, hopefully, to handle that unforeseen thing. It is coming. We don't know when. But I want you to think of bills the same way and expenses the same way. Even the erratic ones. We don't know when unforeseen bills are going to show up. But because we live in a world where things break down and we live in a world where we can't plan everything, unforeseen things are actually things you can plan on. You can plan on, you can like bank on things are going to go wrong. So plan for something to go wrong. Does that make sense? And I'm not trying to be tricky here. While we don't know the specifics for the future, we do know that unexpected payments are going to be coming at some point. Because man is born for trouble as the sparks fly upward, Job says. So at some point, my life's going to hit the fan. Am I ready for that? Am I ready for unforeseen expenses? That in that sense, because I know the nature of the world I live in, are yet foreseeable to some extent. Am I ready for that? Well, let's put your expenses on the table. There's three piles. They show up like this. There's regular expenses. That's your grocery bill. That's your gasoline for your car. Every week you spend on groceries and gas. Okay? Then there's your monthly bills. You got to pay for heat. You got your propane bill, your natural gas bill. You got your electric bill. You got your phone bill. All those are foreseeable. You got your rent or your mortgage or whatever. You can plan those out with fairly high degree of certainty because they don't fluctuate and they come regularly. You consume food regularly. You're going to have to go to the store regularly. But then there's the irregular expenses. You can't plan on getting sick, but it eventually comes. And you go to the doctor and you have a doctor bill. Or you can't plan on when your car is going to break down, but eventually it does. And you take it to the car repair man and he fixes it up. Or the washer, the dryer goes out, or the hot water heater, or the furnace, or some appliance. Eventually something breaks. Eventually there's an irregular payment. We got to account for that. And then there's the catastrophes. The catastrophes would put you in debt for life. These are ones that you don't want to ignore either. This is the $30,000 surgery that then stares you in the face and go, where are you going to get the money for that? I mean, surgeries can be hundreds of thousands of dollars, even millions. I mean, to do chemotherapy and some of those things would cost millions. And so where would that come up? It could cost that much. Where is that money going to come up? I used to feel like that was a trap door in my life. Like, I don't have that one covered, Lord. And as long as, I mean, I could pray, oh, Lord, please don't let this or that happen. He's never made me a promise like that, that he's not going to allow me to fall through a trap door at some point. And so it did. It did happen to me once, and I wasn't prepared for it. And it hurt. So here's then the three that I want you to look at. I want you to have, you're going to budget for the regular ones, and you're going to have insurance of some sort for the catastrophes, and you're going to have a bathtub for the irregular expenses. Now that one I need to explain a little bit, especially because bathtubs are hardly even around anymore. I hope you understand a bathtub is like a big bowl that holds water. I know this is an age where we shower. I got it. But I think you understand, right? It's got the faucet, lets the water in, and it's got a drain at the bottom to let the water out. Now, as long as there's more water coming in, or at least as much water coming in as is going out, the level of the bathtub will not change. That's like the balance between income and expenses. The drain is the expenses. If there's more drain than there is faucet, eventually you hear that gurgling sound. And it's not pretty if it's your bank account, right? And so we don't want that. We want at least there to be enough income to cover expenses, and we want actually extra so we can give and be generous and worship the Lord with it. And so, that was last week's lesson. We don't want to be in debt. And this week's lesson is we're going to make plans so that we don't do that, overspend, and go back into debt. Well, where should I put the level of my bathtub? I mean, should I have $100 in my checking account? $100. Well, that might get me by most weeks. You know, I'll, I mean, 100 extra beyond my expenses. So maybe, you know, I have a $200 food, you know, grocery bill or something. Or maybe I have, you know, $60, $80 in gasoline. And so I think, okay, I spend about, and, you know, I spend a few dollars here or there on a little ice cream or something. And so, okay, I'm up about $300 a week in expenses. Well, let's just keep another $100 in the bank. So if you can picture the bathtub, it's got an inch of water now. And there's enough water coming in. And in my income, through my job, my work, the Lord's providing. And that is then matching what's going out the drain. Got it. And then along comes that broken car bill. You know, right? Car breaks down, $700 expense. And you go, ugh, I don't have $700. But it's not like I can just ignore this, go without a car until I scrap together $700. So this is where people get into debt. They pull out their credit card and they swipe the card. Ah, $700 paid for. Yeah. And, you know, 17.99 APR, annual percentage rate, right? Now you're going to pay every month. There's going to be interest on that payment as you pay it back. That's wasted money. You didn't have to do that. If your level of bathtub money was up higher and you kept it at that level, nothing would be different. You would still be spending your normal regular expenses, and there would be your normal faucet, your income. Nothing would change. But when all of a sudden the bucket comes and scoops out $700, it didn't go out the drain. It's the unusual irregular payment. It's a bucket that's dipped in and throws that water out. You're still water in the bathtub. There was enough to cover it. Dave Ramsey recommends that $1,000 minimum be in your bathtub. In fact, he says before you pay any debts off, even if you're in debt, you have to put $1,000 in place. Remember last week, if you're behind on your assignments, I want you to concentrate on getting all your assignments this week done so that you don't incur a new debt. And once that's established, then let's go back and start making up past assignments. Then let's start paying off debts. It's that kind of wisdom. You're going to have some money. You can't just have nothing in your account. So there's got to be something in the bathtub. Let's raise it up high enough so that irregular payments, those breaking downs, and if you owned a home, it's going to need to be more. Because those big appliances take thousands. But if you don't own a home, it can be $1,000 because they're normally going to be hundreds of dollars of expenses. Okay, does that make sense? So that's the first thing we're going to do. We're going to get the bathtub full. Let's get it up to at least a minimum of $1,000 because we learned earlier that the wise man has stores of oil in his house. He doesn't just go hand to mouth and bring it all down to practically nothing. Now, that's going to require a plan, though, which is the budget. Because if you operate on the basis of, hey, my checking account has $850 in it, I'm good to go. Let's go, you know, for the weekend and let's splurge. You can't do that kind of just check the account, see how much is in there, and then spend on that basis. You spend on the basis of a plan called a budget, which we'll talk about, as I said, at the end. Okay, now we got the bathtub up to where we want it. All right, took a little while, but it's up there. And next time the bucket comes in and takes out money, we have a line item in our budget that is savings, short-term savings, that either would go towards an expense coming along that we know we need to replace this or that, or I'm going to go to school and I need to save up for that, like the ant that sees the winter coming. Or If there's nothing there, at least it brings my bathtub up to where it needs to be. And then, if it is up to where it needs to be, I give it. I'm not a hoarder. I trust in God. He's going to meet my daily needs. And so I give it away in faith and in love. Okay, now that's all set. Bathtub is up there where it needs to be. The next is dealing with catastrophes. Catastrophes should not be handled alone. It would be foolish for you to make your entire life's goal to be to seal yourself off from all catastrophes. I will have enough money in the bank that I can handle any catastrophe. Number one is, that is a lie. Jesus said, not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. All that money can't keep you alive, is what Jesus is saying. Now, it might cover a lot if you're Bill Gates or some of those other very, very rich guys. But even then, it can't keep them alive. So, what does... You need a group. Your goal isn't financial security. Your goal is seeking first the kingdom of God. That's your goal. So, you need to be a part of a larger group that you are regularly contributing to the catastrophes of others, that when it's your turn to have a floor drops out underneath you catastrophe, others come in and build back your barn. I don't know if you remember hearing about like the Amish or the Mennonites, when their barn would burn, they'd have a barn building festival. All the families would get together and in one day a barn would go up. That poor farmer could not put that barn back together. He's going to need it long before he's going to finish it. It's that kind of cooperative group effort of bearing each other's burdens that is involved in insurance and other cooperative endeavors. Now, the world does provide these, but like the world, it provides it with a fee. An insurance company. You maybe heard of car insurance or medical insurance or home insurance. You pay the premium every month. It requires, they have guys that actuaries that actually figure all the math out to make sure they earn money on all this. So you pay the premium every month, and then that money pays corporate, because they got people there, they're working. It pays corporate, and then it goes out and meets the needs of these who had catastrophes. Now, when you have a catastrophe, it's not going to meet all of it. You're going to have to pay up front a certain amount, and that's going to be your bathtub again. You're going to pay that out of your bathtub, the $1,000 deductible, or if it's $5,000, you better make sure you have $5,000 deductible on hand to pay for it. Well, you got to have that, and then beyond it, then after you pay up front, which is the deductible, then they'll pay the rest, or they may only pay portions of the rest, a percentage called a copay. You have to do a copay. Now, my wife and I are involved in a cooperative, a Christian cooperative. There's several of these, I think MediShare, Samaritan Ministries, where they are networks of Christians around the nation that are all pooled together. They're recommended by local churches. Their pastor has to sign off that they go to church. They're believers in Christ, you know, professing believers. They practice, morality, so you're not dealing with all the expenses that comes with substance abuse or sexual diseases. So there's a lot less expenses within this larger group because of the morality involved. And then when somebody has a catastrophe, the headquarters gives a bunch of people that name and all that month's. They write a check of the amount, like their premium, and they send it directly to that Christian. That Christian takes all that money, puts it in their bank account, and writes the hospital one big check. It's an awesome idea, and my wife and I have been so pleased. It works. In fact, we have seen that it is recognized by the government. Even the government, when it was requiring a payment of $1,000 or whatever towards the cooperative medical that our government set up under President Obama. This meets the criteria. I can say, even though it's not insurance, I can tell the government I have this, which is like insurance. So this is how catastrophes get met. If you don't have it, it's an awful feeling. It's like walking across a barn, you know, loft, and you don't know where the weak boards are, and you could fall 15 feet if you don't know where those weak boards are. It's an awful feeling. So you need to plan for it, and you plan for it with insurance or these cooperatives. That's the second thing. Now, the last thing is the budget. A budget is just a plan for how you're going to spend money. If we go back to the time and the money analogy, a budget for money is what a schedule is for time. You got so many tasks, you got so many homework assignments, right, at Spring Branch Academy. And so you figure out, this is supposed to be, humanities is supposed to be 8 hours of reading a week. Where are you going to do the 8 hours? Theology is supposed to be 4 hours of reading a week. Where are you going to fit those 4 hours in? Make a schedule. 2 hours this day, 2 hours that day, 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours at night. And you look at your whole schedule and all the pieces need to fit in place. Same thing with the budget. Once all the expenses are put into place, there had better be some money left over at the end. Because if it's negative, that means you're going to go into debt with that plan. You're going to need to make some hard decisions to tighten up, or you're going to have more income. I mean, there's only one way. Either you open the faucet of the bathtub or you close the drain. Either way, you have to make sure there's at least as much coming into the bathtub as is going out. That's where the plan of the budget comes into place. So, 3 steps goes into making a budget. First of all, you need to know what's going out the drain. So you keep track of your expenses. If you have a checkbook and you've written down in the register, hopefully you're writing down in the register. I know some people, they'll just swipe the debit card. I don't know. I never write it down. If I got money, it'll take it. If not, it'll just say I don't have funds, insufficient funds. Yee, that's acting spontaneously again, right? No plan. Okay, so you're writing down your expenses and you're keeping track. And I've done this, say, with my typical ones like gas for the car or grocery money. And then over, you know, 3-4 months, been able to figure out on average we spend yada, yada, yada per week on gas, per week on groceries. Okay. Then you write that down. If you got your spreadsheet, you would write down that amount, weekly expenses, in your left column, far left column, under weekly expenses. Now, we might need to tweak that, but that's where those numbers came from. They come from current usage. Similarly, for the monthly expenses, those are a lot easier because you sign up for a phone plan and it tells you it costs you this much a month, or, you know, your electric usage, you could look back over the year and get an average, or your heat bill for propane or your rent, you would know that. So you write all those down in the middle column because they get paid per month. Now, some of those there, I have down dental and auto repairs and such. Now I'm thinking those should be left as zero and handled in a separate. That's the bucket that you can't, they're irregular. But then the savings has, if you'll notice on the sample I gave you, has $100. That's where we're putting money back into our bathtub to cover for those others. Now, we might need to raise it to $200 or something. That covers the irregular medical, dental, you know, emergencies, things you can't. You don't know when, but you do know they are coming at some time. And then finally, there are some yearly expenses that every year, you know, you make a trip back to your family members. You have Christmas gifts that cost you so much. Or, you know, every year I need to bring Fido the dog to the vet and it costs X amount of money. You can write those down as a yearly expense and they can be planned for too. Okay. That's your step. That's your first step. You collect the data, and then you write down the expenses. And if there's something on the sample that you spend on that I didn't think of, write it in. You would write it in. So that's, you collected the data, you fill in the budget sheet. Now, the top, you need income. I made it weekly, monthly, and yearly because certain things get paid differently. So most factory jobs get paid every other week. That would basically be a weekly expense. You would cut it in half and you say, that's my weekly income. And so you would write it under weekly income. Now some, like teaching jobs, get paid once a month. I teach it at the college. I get paid once a month. That would be a monthly income. I would write it down there. Some, like in harvesting, maybe maple syruping, or maybe you have a blueberry farm, and strawberry picking comes once a year. You get a nice check for your strawberries. That income would go yearly income. So some things are earned weekly, some things are spent weekly, some things are earned monthly, some things are spent monthly, and some things are earned yearly and are spent by year. Okay, now I've filled in my entire budget sheet. What's going to happen is, on the bottom, I will then, the net per week is the difference, that's subtraction, between my income and my expenses. So let's ignore the two right columns and just look at the left one. On the sample, it says I earn $640 a week. But then there's my weekly expenses that add up to $264. Okay, I subtract $264 from $640, and that leaves me with a balance of $376 extra each week. Well, that extra money is going to be used to pay for my monthly bills, isn't it? So let's convert that weekly amount that every week I have quite a bit of money left over that I didn't spend. Let's convert it and make it like a monthly income. So I'll multiply it by 500 by 52 weeks in a year and divide by 12. That's how I get the weekly net as a monthly income. So every week I have almost $400 extra, okay? Over a year, that would be $400 times like 50 weeks. It's like $20,000 extra that didn't get spent on gas and food. Okay, now let's divide it by the 12 months that are in the year. That's my equivalent of a monthly income, $1,600, $1,629.33. So now I do the same. I subtract from that all my monthly expenses, and I end up with a monthly leftover, a net amount of $169 each month, that if it went according to plan each month, that I did not spend. That then has to pay for my yearly expenses because I have no yearly income. If I did, maybe it would cover my yearly expenses, but I don't. So I'll take that per month amount and multiply it by the 12 months in the year, and that gives me an equivalent yearly income of $2,032 to pay for my yearly expenses. So at the end of the line, I have then, I subtract my yearly expenses from my yearly income, and that net per year needs to be zero or better. If it's negative, I spent more than I earned, and I need to go back and tighten my belt and say, I can't spend as much on clothing. I can't spend as much on gifts. I can't spend as much on... And be realistic. Some things you can't do better on, but maybe you need a better phone plan. Maybe you need a better furnace, so you cut down your expenses on your heating bill. You need to pray about it, explore, ask questions, seek answers until you're until your income is more than your expenses. Somewhere, something's got to give. Now, I was really amazed, honestly. Many of you students came back and told me that if you were to meet all your expenses, you would need an income in the 30s per hour. One student said $37 an hour, one student said $36 an hour, and another student said $32.50 per hour. Maybe you do. I'm going to ask you to fill this out for a $15 an hour expense or income. That's going to be extremely tight. Maybe under normal circumstances, it's impossible to meet a household's needs on that, which is why we have people, households with two incomes, so common. I'm hesitant to encourage you to depend on two incomes. Some are conducive for raising a family. I'll grant that. But what often happens is, and Larry Burkett talks about it, if a family gets too used to having two incomes and their budget is built on two incomes, so say $15 an hour and $15 an hour, a $30 an hour equivalent, what happens when the baby comes along? Now all of a sudden, either I have to, typically they can't give up the second income, so now they add another expense, daycare, and as well, they're not able to spend that time with the baby. And so they're over their head in expenses, and now they've obliged themselves and they can't get out of it, and so they're trapped. Don't do that. Strive to live according to one income or at least one person's earning power under God. Maybe that person has a full-time job and a part-time job. Maybe, you know, so that when baby comes, mom can take the baby and take care of the baby. And she'll have to seek ways creatively to use her talents for the glory of God, like Proverbs 31 says. Understand that. But don't be strapped that you won't have the options. I just feel deeply persuaded about that, to warn you. And so I know one family around here that they were in a two-income situation, and before they started their family, they were already relying upon the husband's income, and the wife, 100% of her earnings was going into paying debt. And as soon as that debt was paid, they'd start their family. That's a wise couple. They were patient. They paid their obligations. We talked last week that the wicked borrow and don't pay back. No. They paid back. I think it was a student loan. They paid it back, and then they started their family. I commend them for that and thank God for their wisdom and what God gave them in that. And so all that to say, maybe the weekly income is going to be much more than that amount, which I think I built on $15 an hour. $640, I think, is about that. And remember, the government's going to take money out of your check. You don't get $15 per hour. You get maybe, you know, $13.20. I think it's 11% or whatever goes to the government right off, something like that. Anyways, they're going to take out. Now, that's why I have federal tax at zero. I'm assuming they took out of your paycheck and have withheld that money. And so it's being already paying the federal income tax. You don't have to pay it. If you're self-employed, you would have to pay it. So all that to say is I probably need to reduce that 640 because it probably had some money taken out. And what you actually have as take-home pay, which is after taxes, is less than what you were hired for because they'll take out your Social Security and withhold federal income tax and often even state income tax. So now can you understand why I think it was Ben Franklin that said you can always count on death and taxes? It's kind of a quip. It's probably been not original to him. It's been used many times. I hope you don't treat taxes as cynical, though. The Bible says it's an act of worship. Romans chapter 13, it's an honor given to the servant of God. And it's something that we shouldn't regret to pay for. We should plan to pay for it. Well, that leads us then to the last step, step number three. Then you need to keep track of your spending. I mean, it's one thing to make a plan and then set it in a drawer and never see it or use it. You need to look at, okay, this is what I spent. This is what, and wow, hey, honey, we're really overspending on our restaurant amount. I think we need to cut back how many times we go out to eat. We only budgeted $100 for this month on it, and we spent a good $240. Well, you won't know that unless you're tracking how much money you're spending. And so keep track of it, and then adjust your budget or adjust your spending. Either way, it has to line up. You need to plan, at least plan for not spending more than you're earning. If emergency comes up, then that's where that savings replenishing your bathtub comes in. Get that bathtub back up. And if it's a catastrophe, well, God be praised, there's insurance companies, and even better yet, there are cooperatives among Christians that help. Well, I hope this gives you a sense of what it's like to plan your expenses, to plan your spending. And again, this is godly. This isn't showing a lack of faith. As if you really trusted God, you would not give a thought to tomorrow. You would just walk blindly into the future. God's going to take care of you. That's a misuse of that command of Jesus, take no thought to tomorrow. It's not talking about no planning. No, it's planning by faith. I'm going to plan to give, as we talked about. This year, I'm going to plan to save short-term savings. I'm going to be an ant. I'm going to plan to stay out of debt like the gazelle. And I'm going to plan to not spend more than I earn. And this is the three things I need to keep track of: those regular expenses, irregular, and catastrophes. So God bless you to be like Him. He plans. And so God bless you in making plans as well. Thank you.